B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome into the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on Thursday, July 2nd. Felger here on location. Yeah, from my backyard. We got Adam Jones in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Marshall Hook as well. That's the program today. Felger, Jones, and Hook. That sounds like a pretty negative show, Jones. What do you think?
I'm pretty excited. We've had a few of these in the past. They're probably almost always around some holiday. But yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to be the good guy. Not easy. Doesn't happen every day. Maybe Marshall Hook will be that guy.
Tell him to turn off the weed whacker down there.
Okay, so of course, you know, as soon as I set up out here, here comes the landscape crew with the air blowers. It's just unbelievable. You know, about all day, nothing.
Yeah, Boston.
All week.
Yeah, Boston, get a good phone, would you, Boston? Huh?
Talk into it like a pizza.
Exactly.
Friday at 2, it's like the first strains of glorified G started, and the guy came into the back with a room. It's just the way it happens. All right, but, you know, those are easy problems to have.
Felger, you can barely noticeable. You can barely even hear it. I can barely tell there's anything there.
Okay, I want to start with the preseason, and they're going down to the two games. You got a thought on that, Jones? Who does that help? Who does that hurt? What's your takeaway on that?
Well, I mean, as a selfish radio host, it sucks. There's no content from the preseason, which I was looking forward to. And to tie it back to the league, I think they care about stuff like that. I think they want to dominate the news cycle and be in the news cycle as much as possible. And I would rather have, I mean, look, I get it. I'm not like, you know, some barbarian who doesn't understand why they're doing it, but I'm disappointed. I was looking forward to the preseason. I was looking forward to, and I know they're fake games, seeing how some of the depth chart would play out. I don't know how much Cam Newton was going to play either way, but looking at Stidham and things like that, I wanted to see all of that. And I hope there's at least two games instead of zero, because I think you do need a little bit of game action before you dive right in, especially this year of all years.
Yeah, so starting from the fan media perspective, it's a loss. I've talked about this before. I like the NFL preseason. I like it. I think most of the preseasons are completely useless. You couldn't get me to watch 5 minutes of it. But I think I watched pretty much the entire preseason end to end until you get to that fourth game.
Yeah, four, I'm out, yeah.
Okay, but like I know that first preseason game, I'm all in. I'm like sort of jacked for it. And I like seeing him out on the field for the first time. And, you know, so I invest and I consume the NFL preseason as a fan, as a media guy. It's also for the industrial take complex, Jones.
Yep.
Really a good time. It's a great time for all of it to just, you know, how do guys look? How do you project? But even better, teasing the media that covers every day and saying, you know, look at Stidham, he's 11 of 12 for two touchdowns, you know, and it's like, then we get to rag on the reporters for overhyping certain guys, and it's just like that, again, the industrial take complex that keeps that rat wheel spinning in the NFL preseason. It's a pretty valuable time. So, to me, that's less content, it's less things, less grist for the mill, and I think it's a loss for us.
I totally agree. I was arguing about this the other day with McCarthy. When they canceled the Hall of Fame game, I'm like, bad news. And he's like, oh, well, why? I got to hear more about Jacoby Myers. I was like, yes, I want to talk about Jacoby Myers
in
August.
Definitely.
That's the time to talk about him. What else are we doing in August? Breaking down the Red Sox stupid bullpen? Like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want more baseball. And I get that this year will be different, but I don't know, by the time the second half of the preseason rolls around, or now I guess the start of the preseason, I don't know, are the Bruins still in or have they already choked? Are the Celtics still going? Like, I don't know. I'm not relying on having the Bruins or Celtics around. So I kind of was looking forward to those preseason games, and now I hope the league doesn't go from 4-2-0.
Okay, so the preseason is sneaky valuable. It's sneaky valuable for a talk show host. Every time I hear a talk show host say, "Ugh, the NFL preseason, ugh, I can't wait for this to go," I'm like, dude, you don't get it. You don't get it. So I'm going to miss it from that perspective. How about from an actual football perspective? So leave us out of it. Leave fans out of it. Football perspective. Hurt, help the Patriots.
Oh, it hurts them. It absolutely hurts them. I think it hurts everybody. So I don't know why the Patriots would be any different. Although I guess in that regard, you know, Bill getting thrown a curveball will deal with that curveball better than everybody else. So maybe if the rest of the league struggles with it, maybe actually the more I think about it and talk it out loud, maybe that is an advantage for the Patriots. You know, they usually do well on a short week because Bill is better at, you know, dealing with these restrictions than other people. So actually the more I say it out loud, that probably is a slight advantage for the Patriots.
How about in terms of how it relates to the Patriots quarterback competition? And let me just ask a question first, Jones. Do you think there even is a quarterback competition?
No. I mean, unless Cam Newton's hurt, which I don't think that makes it a competition, I think it's a competition the same way that Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham was a competition. Like, oh, yeah, Brian, you're totally competing for the job. Yeah, yeah, come in here and compete with Jarrett Stidham. Where it's going to be a real open competition. May the best man win. But we all knew it was going to be Stidham. I think it's the exact same thing. Like, they'll pump him up in the media, and they'll tell him face-to-face they still believe in him, and we'll see you in year three. The old double red shirt, that works out so well. We'll see you in year three, Jarrett. No, I don't think it's a competition. If Newton's healthy, I think independent of how he plays in the preseason, unless he's a complete mess, as long as he's healthy, he's the guy. That's why he's here.
Okay, so does the 2 to 3 to 4 preseason games impact? If you don't think it's a competition, you don't think it impacts it. I mean, again, if it's a competition, then who's ever competing has that less of a chance to show what they got, or, you know, does it matter? So you think it's a 4 games, 2 games, it doesn't matter. This is Cam Newton's job.
Well, yeah, for the quarterback competition, yeah. And I don't know how much I would play Cam Newton in the preseason. You know, like, normally I advocate for guys playing a lot. I just don't know how healthy he is. So until I see him healthy, and the Patriots would know better than I, but if you're just asking me and wondering about the health, I don't know how much I'd play him. I'd probably skew more towards giving him the Randy Moss 2007 preseason and, you know, have him work out on the practice field with his teammates and in L.A. with Mohamed Sanu. I'd have him focus more on that because I am worried about the health. I think everybody should be worried about the health.
Do you think Cam Newton was the starter from the start of this offseason? In other words,
No.
Was this the plan all along?
No, of course not. I mean,
why do you sound so dismissive?
Well, who says I'll execute my plan in the end of June, beginning of July? Who says that?
Everyone in Boston?
Well, yeah, everyone says that now today. But if you asked everyone in Boston on Sunday afternoon, no one was saying sign Cam Newton. You know, how many calls did you take on saying sign Cam Newton on the Friday before the signing? Who was saying sign Cam Newton? Right. I'm sure there were a few people. I'm sure it's like, you know, everybody's telling themselves now, oh, I wanted that. That's totally what I wanted. This is how I wanted it to play out. Everybody we were talking to, and I'm guilty of this too, like, I like Cam Newton. I, by the way, if you can't tell, I do like the signing for the Patriots.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Marshall, it's hard to tell if he likes anything.
I gotta be honest. He's better than Stidham. I mean, at least he's more proven than Stidham. But, like, Marshall, my issue, and I don't know, I'm guessing this is why you don't buy it, is my issue is everybody just acts like Cam Newton is just a no-brainer home run. What's the downside? Like, the whole no downside crew is so maddening to me, because did we not just go through Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon? Like, I thought that killed the no downside debate last year.
No, I mean, of course there's, I mean, how can you say there's no downside?
Well,
what if he sucks?
Well, that's a big downside, right?
That's a downside.
What if he sucks and now the whole locker room is jazzed up about Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore eyeball emojis, Julian Edelman, you know, photoshopping Cam Newton into a Patriots jersey, you know, now they're all hyped up about Cam Newton. What if he sucks and you go, oh, we got to go back to Jarrett Stidham? Ugh. Like, what? Like that? That's a huge downside to this, potentially.
It's a relative downside. To put Cam Newton in the same group as Antonio Brown, who shot his way out of town.
Yeah, not for his...
And, you know, the Josh Gordon, who had massive, you know, substance abuse problems. You're just talking about whether or not this player is good, whether or not this player is healthy, which... if you had an answer to either of those things, then you would have had to pay a hell of a lot more money, and he would never have left Carolina, and he never would have landed with the Patriots to begin with. So, of course, we don't know whether or not he's healthy, and of course, we don't know whether or not he's good, but that's why he's here. That's why he costs so little. So the downside is he's not great. Well, that's the downside to signing any player who comes to you cheap.
What about the locker room, though? And again, I'm not comparing him off the field to Brown or Gordon. I'm just saying that we heard the whole no downside thing with those guys. And there's a big downside when you're counting on someone. The team gets hyped around them and then they suck or they're not there. Like, that's a big downside.
Well, except that all that means is you're back where you were before. It's not like
except everybody was excited for the new replacement plan. Stidham. Forget about that kid. I want Cam Newton. Now the whole locker room has changed who they want.
Well, no. Wait, I'm sorry. Are you equating the entire locker room to the people who tweet at you and who are on sports radio? Because those are two entirely different things.
No, I'm talking about Stephon Gilmore tweeting and being excited about it. The McCourty twins talking about it on their podcast. Julian, those are like all the biggest names on the team. They're all excited about it.
I somehow think that if he's no good, I mean, you can be excited about a guy, right? You can be excited about the actual person that is Cam Newton and the hope that he's going to be something good. I don't think that means the locker room just crumbles in disaster if it turns out he's not good. And they go, all right, well, that didn't work out.
Yeah, to me, the downside is more wasted time. You know, that's all wasted time.
Sure.
When you could have been, you know, better spent elsewhere. And, you know, it's relative risk, Marshall. It's not a massive risk. It's not a financial risk, that's for sure. And I don't know if they're risking the locker room or not. I don't know if I'd agree with Jones, you know, really on that. But it's time. I mean, Antonio Brown cost him a lot of time and energy last year. It did. And there were some sort of ancillary things that you never really could have predicted with Antonio Brown. He did cost him money, by the way. And then after he left, the quarterback got even more pissy. And I think the Brown thing was part of it. And they sort of had to, you know, they geared up for him. Then they had to gear up to the other guys. And Brady never got on the page with the other guys. And not that Antonio Brown was totally to blame there. I just think it was all part of a picture where if Antonio Brown had never entered the equation, they probably would have been a little better off. Okay, so, but like, the real downside is the guy's not good enough. The guy can't play, and you've lost games and time in the meantime. But I don't know why, like, fans never put that on the list of downside.
No.
The downside is he's not the right guy for the job. You think he is, though, Jones. You think Cam Newton is the right guy for the job.
Well, yeah, I think he's a better fit for the job than Stidham. And I like Stidham as a prospect, but I'd much rather have Cam Newton, former MVP or not former MVP. I'd much rather have him at quarterback with what they have around him, not as much on offense, but the defense that they have and Cam's ability to at least pre-injury make some plays with his feet. I think that's an upgrade over Jarrett Stidham, the nameless, faceless fourth-round pick that no one cared about till he was here. Yeah.
Okay, here's the show. Felger, Jones, Marshall Hook continue with the fallout and the reaction to the signing of Cam Newton. We'll do a little bit of Celtics later on in the show as well. We want to talk about Bill Belichick's role in this whole signing. We want to talk about and take a deeper dive into just how good Cam Newton is, or not good he is, as the case may be. Felger Maz also made First Take today on ESPN. Not a good thing. Normally you'd say good job. Felger Maz, I'd say in this case, probably not a good thing, but we'll get to that as well. We'll take your calls on whatever you want right after these words.
And now, by and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Maz.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Maz.
We don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back to our breaking news here on SportsCenter. The NFL is cutting the preseason in half. ESPN's Kevin Seifert is reporting that the league has canceled weeks 1 and 4 of its original preseason schedule. Most players will still report to training camp on July 28th. NFL insider Diana Rossini joining us with much more on this story. Diana, what's behind the reason why the league canceled half the preseason?
All right, I'll give you the two big reasons. One, travel, right? They want to make sure that people aren't going in other locations that aren't controlled. So that way, teams, they stay at their facilities as much as they possibly can without having to get on the road, okay? So that's obviously because of COVID. The second part I think is really interesting, and this was really strong coming from the NFLPA's group here when they were having these discussions. Teams need to physically get in football shape. They need to get ready. We know so many gyms were closed. Guys were having these makeshift weight rooms in their garages. As much as we've seen on social media, football players working out, it's not the same as it's going to be when they're at their facilities with all the access to their weight rooms and the field and playing together. So this is really about a fitness thing and getting them football ready.
All right, so that's ESPN reporting that Jones, you think you get more football ready practicing than these preseason games? Do you think it's possible these preseason games get in the way of full conditioning? I mean, I think they might, though, because the day before there's a walkthrough, and then the day of you're not practicing or really doing anything, and then the next day is not really a training camp practice. It's like a
in a normal year, though, it's like OTAs and mini camp and then training camp. Like, how many months are they doing it before you get to the preseason? It's like months and months.
Well, look, I get what they're saying about you can do more, I think, without those games in there. I think they get more done with these joint practices than they do in the games. So, like, I get that part. But, that to me, I get that makes sense. I just don't take it too far. Apparently, reportedly, the players want no preseason games, and they're pushing for no preseason games this year, and the owners are sticking to two. And I hope the owners stay there. I hope the owners stay there. And believe me, I'm not rooting for the owners because they get the ticket revenue there. And again, I don't know if there's going to be people in the stands or not. But just, you know, generally speaking, those preseason games and those preseason ticket prices are odious. That is one of the grossest things in pro sports, right? That the owners charge you full freight for those preseason games. So I hate to side with the owners on this one. I just think the preseason is a important little appetizer for football, and it's important for content. And let me just say quickly that I think that we're missing this now with these other sports coming back. Like, Red Sox spring training 2.0 started yesterday, Jones.
Yep.
But there's no media coverage. There's no media there, where normally you'd have a Red Sox player or two sit at the picnic tables. They'd get asked questions, they'd say something stupid, and we'd be able to rip them, and we'd get a segment or two out of it.
I like the picnic tables, yeah.
You know what I mean? Again, it's just grist for not just the talk show, but the newspaper. It's just that sports talk, sports hamster wheel needs these camps and the coverage and everything. And without it, every little bit that you lose that whole cycle. So they got to be careful about cutting too much of the preseason.
Well, you believe that the NFL wants to be in the news 12 months a year, right?
That's right.
So this is a good way to do it. Like, if you really believe that, then yeah, I think their preseason, they show highlights from the games. Who cares if the highlights matter or the results matter or not? They show highlights. We talk about it. It like speaks the NFL into the mainstream. Not that it wouldn't be mainstream anyway, but it helps to maintain it. So I do agree with that. To cycle back to what you said or circle back to what you said about joint practices, I think joint practices may have more value than a preseason game, but I don't know if they give you the exposure the way these games do.
And yeah, absolutely.
Get fans interested in new names and new positional battles. And, you know, if it was going to be Stidham and Hoyer, we'd all be all in on this Stidham preseason like we were with the Garoppolo preseason a few years ago when Brady was suspended. Like, that was an awesome preseason because this is your guy. That would have been this level of preseason. Now with Cam here, I'm not sure it's quite the same, but I don't know. There's still a bunch of fans who believe in Stidham, yeah.
There'll be more chances to see Cam Newton in the new offense
in
August.
If he plays.
Which I would take. Well, okay. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, if we were going to see him three or four times, now I'm going to see him one or two. That's a loss. So we can hit on that. The Patriots quarterback situation, by all means. 617-779-0985. Leo's in Maine. Lead us off, Leo.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. Hey, look, I've got a question. If you had a choice of taking two quarterbacks that have been in the system and everybody knows the system, how long is it going to take Cam Newton and Josh McDaniels to change the offense to fit him? And I will take your comments off the air.
Yeah. How long is it going to take? However long they've known they were going to sign him, whether that's a week or 3 months or whatever, that's how long it's going to take. But Jones, just circling back to there can't be, you know, on this point, let's say the Patriots don't want to change their offense that much. You don't think that there's a scenario where Stidham or Hoyer is a better fit for what they want to do than Cam Newton? Cam Newton is not the most, I'm about to say not the most accurate guy in the world. He's not accurate. He's one of the least accurate top quarterbacks in the league. I mean, what if they just want to run the Patriots offense, the Brady offense, and have someone who gets rid of the ball as quickly as possible and as accurately as possible?
I don't think they want to do that because I don't know how similar, I mean, you know, the terminology I'm sure was the same, but I don't know how similar the offense they ran with Bledsoe was to Brady in terms of like what they called, or Brady to Castle, or certainly Brady to Jacoby Brissett when Brissett played for a couple of games. You know, Garoppolo might have been pretty similar to Brady. So I think they always tailor make it to the quarterback. And, you know, I think they would have to spend a lot of time and invest a lot of time Taylor making it to Cam Newton, especially this late in the game. I'd agree with that, which is part of the downside you're alluding to. But yeah, I mean, at this point in time, if you're going to build something and build it for the rest of the team, you're going to have to pivot on the fly. I do agree with that, and I think they can do it, but I think that's the only way to do it. You're not gonna jam a square peg into a round hole. That's what stupid teams like the Jets do. They say, we have Cam Newton, we're going to run our offense, we're going to do what we always do, as opposed to opening things up and adjusting to the players you have. And I think the Patriots do have an excellent coaching staff. They have the best head coach in the history of football. So I think they can adjust to it. I think they will adjust to it. I think that's what good coaching staffs do.
And Maz mentioned this yesterday. So if the Patriots are tailoring everything to Cam Newton, which I think they should, by the way, I think they should turn him loose and make this a Cam Newton offense. Otherwise, it's a waste to bring him in. So if you're going to do that, now Stidham is competing or learning, grooming, training in a Cam Newton offense, not a Jared Stidham offense, or, you know, the offense he was drafted for. Does that set him back another year? How does he even compete if he's competing for the other guy's offense and the other guy's skill set, which is different and it is unique? And, like, you could sort of look at that and say, well, not only is Stidham going to wait 2 years, which you think is bogus anyway,
yeah,
the second year, it's not even, you know, set up for him. So in some ways, you could say Jared Stidham might be porked here.
Yeah, no, he's porked. I mean, unless I'm wrong, I mean, look, I've been wrong so many times, I lost track years ago, so I easily could be wrong about this. I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just telling you what I think. I think Cam Newton's the starting quarterback. If Stidham's the starting quarterback at really any point this year, midway through the year, after the first month, if he starts the year as a starting quarterback, well, then, you know, then I'm wrong about all this, and Stidham still has a chance. But if Cam's the guy and they brought him in to be the guy, which is what I think is the case, then, yeah, he's porked. Like, there's okay. Not a great track record of guys coming in after 2 years of not playing.
We're showing on the and we'll get to that later. Jones has a workup on that, the quarterbacks who've had to wait 2 years. We're showing on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast a Instagram post from Cam Newton that I can't make hide nor hair of. My connection's bad, maybe, but he also uses that – that font that I can't.
Yeah.
Does anyone have it on their computer? Can you just read to me what the hell he wrote there?
You can't speak Wingdings. You don't speak Wingdings there.
I don't know what that means.
It's a font. I couldn't read that either off the screen. Oh. Is that new?
I know
just
that
Google
I'm
it.
Older than at least one of
Google
you,
it, Marshall. Just Google the thing.
Yeah,
what did he say?
Google it, Hook. Come on, Hook. God. Yikes.
You know, I've missed you guys.
Hook, let's go.
What did he write?
G-O-O-G-L-E.com.
This is so... seriously.
Somewhere in the show prep, say, hey, maybe get that Cam Newton tweet up so when we ask you, you can
I don't even
it.
Know about the Cam Newton. I'm not on Twitter. I don't do this crap. That's why we have all you people to dink around on the internet and tell me what people are saying and posting. That's the whole deal. That's the deal. Okay? I'm not responsible for the crap on Instagram. Never mind in the stupid font or what it I can't read.
Put it
that's
back
your...
up there.
Part of the news guy's job there, Marshall, is to be online.
Is to immediately have the thing that nobody knew you were going to ask for. By the way, while
I didn't know what's there,
you,
I guess he was posting it.
For it, okay? I don't even know where the hell it was.
Ron in Texas, what do you got on Cam Newton?
Hey, guys. I'm just curious, you know, like what you guys think of the connection is with the Auburn University with Gus Malzahn. Look, I think Cam Newton's going to be the starting quarterback here. I also like Stidham and I watch college football. But I really think that has something to do with the fact of maybe watching the offense at Stidham and Auburn, and now you're looking at Cam Newton, and I guess they can probably not really decipher about, you know, what offense they want to run now. I'm just curious.
Okay,
about that.
Okay, Ron. Yeah, my college football knowledge is so poor, Jones.
Yeah.
Was it the same coaching when Newton was there?
Malzahn was the – I think he was the offensive coordinator. Maybe he was the head coach that first year, but he was definitely on that staff. I forget if he was the OC or the head coach. But, yeah, it is. But I didn't realize Malzahn was one of these guys. But, I mean, we know Bill has his college coaches, so I guess, you know, this just might be a guy who they gravitate to. We know Bill loves the SEC. Well, I'm sorry. Bill loved the SEC until he went to Division II this year in the second round and took some safety nobody ever heard of. Now he
That's
loves
aside.
Now he loves Lenore Ryan, but... Yes, he loves his SEC players, so maybe it's just as simple as that. This is another coach he has a relationship with. I didn't know about it, but maybe.
Look, 9 years in the league, I think the college connection is done. Like, you know,
okay,
after
but,
a certain,
but what about
after a certain amount of time, meaning that he just trusts Malzahn's word?
Like, no, I don't or the, he, the, I mean, what the caller said is that he feels like there are elements of the offense that translate.
Oh, I don't know.
By
I'll leave it to college kids. Yeah, go ahead. What did he write
there?
Was on
Instagram, all right? Cam Newton writes in perfectly legible English, it's not a lot of things money cannot buy, but amongst the top of that list is things you would find respect as one of those. This is not about money for me. It's about respect.
respects okay. playing
well,
time.
Well, it's definitely not about money. He signed for the minimum. So there you go. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. And Hook, just stay on top of that crap. Okay? Because I there's
maybe give me more than
seriously, Hook,
zero seconds notice.
I don't know when someone's going to post something. That's not, I don't know when they're going to do that.
All right.
Either way, like I said, Felger and Maz made first take today on ESPN. Not a good thing. We'll talk about it after Hook's update.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's Felger and Maz with Adam Jones and Marshall Hook in for Maz and Big Jim Murray. I'm on location. Those two guys are in our Tom Ford Tire Studios in Dorchester. The other day, Maz and I did a segment on Cam Newton's touchdown celebrations and how that would fly in New England. And that was taken in some quarters. Some people thought that was a segment on race, which it most definitely was not. But some people... a segment on race, certainly online, and today it was picked up by Stephen A. Smith and Molly Quorum and Max Kellerman on First Take on ESPN, and they did a segment on it, so we'll play some sound from it. And Jimmy, I want to stop and start this as you go, and we'll give you our thoughts. Molly's going to read a quote board of something that I said during that segment, and I'm going to cut out all of Max Kellerman because Max went on like a 3 or 4 minute thing, and I have no idea what the hell he said. I just couldn't make hide nor hair of it. It's going to cut to Stephen A. So, Jimmy, go ahead.
Even if something as simple and seemingly innocuous as the dabbing, the supermanning, all the celebrating and the showboating on the field, they don't want you doing that here. I hope he doesn't. I like that about the Patriots. I like that they don't ride each other like ponies after touchdowns or whatever.
Stephen A.
I don't think they need to examine anything in this particular situation. Let me be very, very clear in where I stand on this. We all know that in the eyes of African Americans throughout this nation, Boston itself, Massachusetts to some degree, it has its history, obviously. And you see people, numerous black people over the years have complained about discomfort. This is not the time for that in terms of this particular incident involving Tony Maserati and Michael Felger. I've got news for you. I found nothing about what they had to say racist at all. I really, really didn't. And I'll let Damian go in a few minutes, and maybe he has a different opinion than me, but I certainly didn't find anything racist about it. They were talking about the culture of the New England Patriots. They're talking about what they might deem acceptable as an organization or what fans in that locale may particularly like or dislike. They alluded to the same things when Chad Ochocinco arrived. Sometimes they didn't like it from Gronk until he was winning and he was effective and he was balling out on the field, and then they didn't give a damn. I've known Tony Maserati for years, not intimately, obviously, because it's not like we're friends and hang out with one another, but he's a colleague that used to write for the Boston Globe. I think he still contributes to them. He's done a good job as their radio host there. We've always been cool with one another. I've never sensed anything racial about him. Michael Felger, I don't know from a can of paint at all. And you
stop.
Can look at-
stop. It's a good line. It's a good line. Can of paint.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make note of that because that obviously stood out. Go ahead. Roll it, Jimmy.
What he said, and it might take you aback a little bit, or you might find some discomfort, but I think in this day and age, it's because we're reaching to some degree. We're justified in our willingness to reach in this day and age because of the things that have been transpiring, the systemic racism that we've had to address, the fact that white folks appear to be a bit more open and receptive to having that race conversation and things of that nature, and that's a big, more transcendent discussion. But as it particularly pertains to this, I listened. I didn't just read the transcript. I actually went back and I watched this video. Not saying that none of y'all did, but I watched the video of them talking about this particular subject on sports talk radio. You have conversations back and forth about a team, what their MO is, what their cultural identity is, and they might be wrong about it for crying out loud. I don't know. But what I do know is that this is not a situation to peel from it and say, oh, my God, they're racist. I found nothing wrong with the conversation that they were having. And if I were listening to it, I would say, excuse me, I might disagree with them. But it's not like it's implausible what they're saying in terms of Cam and his willingness to celebrate. Not that there was anything with the Superman cape and all this stuff. I've seen New England Patriots celebrating. I definitely think that would be allowed. But I also think him being the successor to Tom Brady, okay, and coming in there with his bravado, his swag, there are going to be some people that are incredibly receptive to it, and there are going to be some people that are adamantly put off by it. I think we can assume that. I think that's what the radio hosts were talking about, and I took no offense to what they were saying at all.
Okay, you can stop right there. Damian Woody goes on to say he laughed at the segment because when he played for the Patriots, Belichick told him to go nuts and celebrate and show emotion, which Belichick definitely does. He wants you to show emotion. And he'll, like we saw in that Do Your Job, the 2009 thing, right, where he stopped the tape and said, look, someone just made a play and no one's – yeah. A football life, right. Yeah. But he wants you to show emotion. I don't think that he approves of the choreographed dance routines. I just don't think he does, and I know that because we play the Gronkowski cut, which was the allusion to riding the pony. That was – Gronkowski was asked about Brandon Cooks riding him like a horse. And Rob Gronkowski, we have the cut. We played it yesterday. We can play it again. Rob Gronkowski said, I'm not allowed to talk about it. We got yelled at about this some time ago, so I don't even want to say anything, but I kind of do. And so that's where the ride the pony thing came from. It was Gronkowski talking about being ridden by a horse. Anyway, long story short, the subject was obviously not about race. It's about Bill Belichick's tolerance for choreographed celebration routines and his tolerance for that with a player in Cam Newton who's, well, that's pretty important too. That's a pretty important part of his game, his celebration routines. It's a big part of the way he carries himself on the field and how that fits with him. Fans, I think, are more than willing. I think I'm the minority, meaning the outlier that doesn't like the dancing and the carrying on with athletes. I like the guys that hand the ball to the ref and get back to the sidelines, act like you've been there before. That's me. I think I'm in the minority. I think most fans are more than happy with that. I think most fans want to see it. The question is Bill Belichick. It was about Bill Belichick. And that doesn't matter, you know, if you're black, white, purple, or green with yellow polka dots. He wants, he wants team-oriented things versus individual-oriented things. And that's the conversation with Cam Newton. It's obviously the conversation with Cam Newton. But if you want to turn into race, you can turn into race. You can turn anything into race. And if you want to take on the race, I'll give it to you right here. I asked this 2 or 3 days ago. Well, when the signing first happened, I asked Jones, is Boston ready for their first African-American quarterback? Because the Patriots, you know, Jacoby Brissett's two starts are the only two starts by a black quarterback in Patriots history. And that was in a fill-in nature. So the Patriots have never really had a black quarterback. And so I asked, is Boston ready? And I asked that in the context of, is racist Boston ready? Is old Boston ready? Right? Are the curmudgeons ready for an African-American quarterback? What I really should have done is asked, is everyone ready? Everyone. And what I mean by that is, for lack of a better term, the other side. You know, being the starting quarterback for the 6-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots is going to come with a high level of scrutiny and criticism and a magnifying glass. And if you turn around, well, are you? Are you going to turn around anytime someone puts that magnifying glass on Cam Newton and call him a racist? Then are you ready for it? I mean, that's sort of my question here. I can only speak for our show. We've spent the last 9 years kind of hammering Tom Brady. And nothing's been off the table with him. Nothing. Not on the field. We go with Tom Brady on the field, off the field, professional life, personal life, what he wears, how he talks, how he says it, how he brands himself. We talk about his wife. We talk about his kids. We talk about the tabloid stories. Everything is on the table with Tom Brady. If I do the same with Cam Newton, are you going to try and get me fired? Or are we going to treat everyone the same? And if I am supposed to treat Cam Newton differently, then doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? Defeat what we're trying to do here? Equality? So, like, there's all kind of a way of saying that Felgram has treated everyone poorly. So, but if I'm not allowed to treat, right? I mean, that's we're equal. When it comes to us treating people poorly, we are colorblind. But if I'm supposed to treat someone better because of the color of his skin, or I'm supposed to lay off because you're going to turn around and call me a racist, well, that I think that defeats the purpose. And that, you know, that's I love the Cam Newton signing from a talk show standpoint because he's great fodder, and it's going to be fun to see how this all plays out, and I'm really looking forward to it. But that part of it's a headache, that anytime I want to criticize him, I've now got to watch myself. And it's like, well, that's no fun, and that should defeat the purpose. That segment had nothing to do with race.
No.
So anyway, that's my thought. Do you want to weigh in?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, didn't Bill lecture Rob Gronkowski about, like, I don't – Bill may have tolerance, and yeah. Bill may let guys celebrate, and like even the football life thing that keeps getting brought up, Bill was like, "Hey, go congratulate your teammate, give him a high five." He didn't say do the Superman, and like, you know what I mean? Like he wasn't emphasizing a celebration. He was saying go high five, go pat him on the butt, go give him a fist pump. So like to me, the Belichick thing, I think is right. I don't think Bill loves it. He might tolerate it. I don't think Bill loves it. Like I don't care if guys celebrate.
Let me tell you this.
Yeah, go.
Yeah, if they signed Travis Kelce, he wouldn't be able to do half the crap that he does in Kansas City. If they signed Aaron Rodgers, you think Aaron Rodgers is going to come in here and do a stupid, you know, discount double, that nonsense? That stupid thing which I've talked about before? I mean, I got no use for that either. Like, you think Bill Belichick would let Aaron Rodgers go around taunting people like that after making a play? He doesn't care about the color of your skin. I don't care about the color of your skin. I'm not into the dancing thing. But if I say that, are you going to label me something? That's not right. It's not fair. And, well, you're going to ask for different coverage for Cam Newton than I gave Tom Brady, which ain't going to be as fun. And it's not, and it ain't fair to boot. But the whole Gronkowski thing, Jimmy, just play the cut again, because I love hearing it so much. It's just a funny cut. But this is where the ride the pony thing came from, and how I know Bill doesn't allow choreographed celebrations. He doesn't even allow them to talk about it. This is after a game in November of 2017 where Brandon Cooks jumped on Gronkowski's back after a touchdown.
Rob, the Patriots haven't been making full use of the more relaxed celebration rules this year, but at following the final touchdown of the game, it looked like Brandon Cooks appeared to hop on your back and ride you like a racehorse. How did that particular scene come about?
That was not planned or anything, and we got yelled at. We're not allowed to talk about celebrations. That's what we got told, but I kind of want to talk about it, but I kind of don't because I'll get in trouble, so I don't know what to do. So it just happened on the spot. It wasn't planned. We'll just keep it there.
It's a great cut, right? I mean, not only are they not allowed to do it, they're not allowed to talk about it. So, I don't know. Cam Newton's celebrations are a pretty important part of how he carries himself on the field. So, that's the topic. That's the issue.
Gronk confused.
There it is. And an opening for Jones to make fun of Rob Gronkowski. All right, you want to weigh in on that? You can. We have a quick Celtics minute as well coming your way in our long commercial-free segment next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app. They say it.
I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Well, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah, it was super important for me. I really, really needed that break. It definitely helped me, you know, get back to myself and, you know, start to feel comfortable, you know, on my knee. And yeah. No, it was a very unfortunate time, but it was in my best interest for sure. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with the way the schedule is, and you know, just gonna keep on taking care of myself. That's really all I can do. So I'm just gonna stay on top of things and, you know, take it day by day.
All right, here comes a Celtic minute, and then we'll get your calls. We just wanted to put this on the table, and in the spirit of Felger and Mazz treating everyone poorly. Let's get now to the Celtics and Kemba Walker. So a comment, Jones, bothered you. Why did that bother you from Kemba Walker?
Well, I thought Kemba Walker at the All-Star game, everybody's like, no, you know, Kemba Walker's fine. He's good. Don't worry about it. He played in the All-Star game. Jones, you're barking up the wrong tree, even after he missed a whole bunch of time immediately after the All-Star game because he went over his minutes to play in some dumb, meaningless All-Star game that no one cares about. Instead of taking... he said a break. What do they call that little stretch there where they have regular season games? Then they have a couple of days where they don't play games. Then there's an All-Star game, which doesn't matter. Then they start up again, like, I don't know, six, seven, 8 days late. What do they call that thing? Oh, right, the All-Star break. You had a break built in there. Not only did you play in that stupid game, you went over your minute limit for no reason whatsoever. You had a minute limit because you had a knee issue that I think you still have. You tweaked it. You exacerbated it. You made it worse. Then you had to miss time. And now you're telling me you needed 3 months off even after that when you came back and kind of stunk for a while, rushing back at the end of the year? Why on earth did he play in that game? And I get, you know, taking time off before the All-Star break to return for the All-Star game is a little different than playing in the game and then missing time afterwards. But this is a Kyrie-type move from Kemba Walker. It is. It's prioritizing a meaningless game to do what? To be on TNT? To go meet up with buddies on well, other teams? Like, why do that as opposed to play in the actual games that matter? And if you're now telling me you needed a break, take it during the... I already forgot. What's it called again? Oh, right, the All-Star break. That's when you take your break.
Yeah, how long is that break?
I don't know, a week?
3 days?
No.
4 days?
No, it's longer.
How long have they been gone now? Three months?
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, 3 months and 3 days are two different things.
Yeah, well, they are. But you think playing in that All-Star game helped the knee at all, going over his minutes limit that they set for him? You think that was a good idea?
I think
that, in retrospect, that was a good idea now?
I don't care, because the difference between taking 3 days off or not is wildly not even comparable to taking 3 months off.
You think it's a coincidence he missed a bunch of time after that game?
Yeah, I don't care.
Well, I care.
Well, because you're relating two things that have nothing to do with each other.
How do you know?
Because you're comparing 3 days to 3 months.
Well, but what if he hurt himself in that game? They gave him a limit for a reason.
If he hurt himself in the first regular season game back?
Well, then that's a regular season game, and you're actually out there playing for a reason. It's not a meaningless, stupid game.
But what you're nitpicking him for is talking about needing a break. But the break he's talking about has nothing to do, not even a tiny little bit to do
what I'm saying
with the
is,
break that you're comparing
if
it
you
to.
Don't, if he took the first break, he wouldn't have needed the second three-month break. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
If you take the first break and you don't go over your minutes limit and you don't enhance the injury or make it worse, maybe you don't ultimately need a three-month break. Maybe you should have managed it during the All-Star break.
I see.
Well, here's where I stand. I mean, Jones is right, Hook. But in the NBA, like, I've given up on the NBA All-Star game, Jones, meaning I'm not going to fight it anymore because it is so important to the players in the NBA, and it's unlike any other sport. It's hard to wrap our head around where, you know, baseball players have their private planes warming up in the second inning to get the F out of there as soon as their inning is done. And football players, I mean, you know, the big football players skip it every single year. They want nothing to do with it, whether it's in Orlando or Hawaii or no one wants to go. Hockey players take fines instead of playing in that game. And the NBA player wants to be there more than anything, gets pissed when they don't get chosen. If they're hurt, they go play. You know, every other sport, they use an injury as an excuse to get out of it. In the NBA, they hide an injury to go play it. It's like, it's crazy, right? Like, it is so important to the NBA player. And I don't get it. I wish it wasn't, but that's one I'm going to stop, you know, beating my head against the wall on. It's like, that's just the way it is, okay?
Yeah, so, but what if you're already hurt? And what if you make it worse?
I'm with you. But I mean, if that for me is a losing argument because the NBA player wants to go to the NBA All-Star game and is going to do everything he can to go, and it's important to him. And
they may want to. They're just wrong.
Yeah, they are wrong. Here's a second guess. And it's not the 3 days versus the 3 months. It's when he came back, he was hurt and didn't play well. And so you're looking at, we'll see how this all plays out here, but right now you're looking at, are you the sixth seed? No, I'm sorry, you're the three.
Correct.
I mean, you're seeding. Yeah, you should be easily the second seed in the Eastern Conference, okay? And if Kemba Walker's injury got in the way of that, then, you know, that it would mean more if it was the previous environment with road, you know, the travel and home road and all of that. Maybe it won't matter as much in the bubble. But, that you know, that's what would aggravate me, that maybe you kicked away 3-4 games that you should have had if Kemba Walker was 100%. But his going to the All-Star game and pushing it to go to the All-Star game is hardly unique. It's hardly unique.
No, it's not unique. Missing a bunch of time after it is kind of unique, but wanting to play in that game is not unique, no.
Okay, quickly, Jones, you think the Celtics have a chance to get out of the East?
Well, I mean, I think the scariest team left for the Celtics...
What does that mean, Hook? Hook, what do you think that means that, yeah, well...
No, I mean, do I think they have a chance? What I was going to say is...
They suck, and they have no chance.
No, 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 no.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
I think Milwaukee is...
Jones translator.
Milwaukee is the scariest team left. Like, I think if they somehow get past Milwaukee, the L.A. teams don't scare me. So, They better hope they avoid Philly in the first round. I think they will. Philly has an easy remaining schedule. The Pacers don't. Philly will probably move up to 5. Indy will move down to 6. The Celtics are basically locked in at 3. People talk about like they can move up or down. They're basically locked in. So I think they'll avoid Philly. If they get Milwaukee, I'm picking the Bucks. But if they somehow get past them, yeah. I mean, I think they can win the whole thing. So, yes, I guess I think they can get out of the East, yeah.
All right, so there's your Celtics Minute. You can add that to the list. I promise we'll go right to your phones after Marshall Hook's 90-second update. Your phone number is 617-779-0985. To you right after this is no commercials.